WNYC, and the de Blasio administration says yes and no to poor doors. They approved a mixed-income building on the Upper West Side, begun in the Bloomberg years, that would segregate affordable housing residents through a separate entrance. But the de Blasio administration says no new so-called poor doors on his watch. We'll take a closer look now with WNYC development reporter Janet Babin. Hi, Janet.
Hey, Brian.
Tell us about this Upper West Side building.
Well, this is a building at 40 Riverside Boulevard, actually. It's going to include 55 units of affordable housing out of 274 total units. It's being developed by Extel Development Company. That's Gary Barnett's company. The plans were submitted in early 2013. Construction began. And what the developer did, what Gary Barnett did, was to make it two separate buildings. In essence, that's how they see it. There's a building that's completely separate, filled with affordable units, and then there's a building that is the market rate units. And this is in the zoning code. And what the zoning code says is if you don't create a separate property for the affordable units, then what happens is you have to intersperse the market rate units with the affordable units. So to avoid that, to avoid sort of having an affordable unit perhaps on the top floor or the higher floors, they decided to create a separate building with a separate entrance.
Bloomberg policy.
Well, this was zoning code that was created in 2005, and again in 2009 it was amended. It's part of the inclusionary zoning, so it's part of creating affordable units. And yes, it was during the Bloomberg administration that these zoning laws were created. But the laws were created to avoid developers putting all the affordable units on lower floors.
Is that it? Or, as I was reading the relevant section of the law last night, it looked, maybe I'm reading it too cynically, like a way to avoid having affordable housing tenants live on the same floors with the market rate tenants or owners.
Well, that's what I was saying.
It's a separate affordable building attached to the market rate building, a way the developer can get credit for making 20% of the units in the same development be affordable without having diverse income next door neighbors.
Well, the zoning code doesn't specify, you know, where there needs to be. What the requirement is that the units, if they are in the same building, have to be interspersed, as you said. They have to be mixed in with market rate. To avoid that,
they have to be at least like one out of every three on the same floor,
you're
right?
Good. Not less than 65% of the these affordable units, I believe. It needs to be interspersed there on the same floor. So, the zoning code gets very specific. And in my story, actually, online, you can go to the link and read the actual zoning language. I won't bore listeners right now with reading it. But it is there, and you can decide. You know, you really need an attorney to parse out this language. It is zoning code. It is very dry, and it is an interpretation that developers have interpreted the zoning code so that they feel they can create a separate building to use a loophole, really, to avoid interspersing market rate with affordable units on upper floors of their very expensive buildings.
Does that mean developers believe it would hurt property values to have tenants with lower incomes integrated onto the same floors as market rate residents?
You know, Brian, I don't think that's it. Maybe some do, but most developers I speak to, they need to recoup the cost of providing affordable units by making sure that they take advantage of the higher floors by selling those at market rate. So perhaps if you had a scenario where you had to put an affordable unit on the higher floor of your luxury building, perhaps the case could be made for these developers that, yes, they might lose some money if they had to intersperse all the units. That's giving them the benefit of the doubt. And there are some who say that, if you're living at 157, one of the big luxury residences in the city, maybe you don't want to live right next door to someone who's paying much less. Gary Barnett's going to sell the units. The space is going for about $10 or $15 per square foot for the affordable units at 40 Riverside. Market rate is going to be 5 or 6 times that at least. So
people are going to be of really different incomes.
Yes.
Listeners, what do you think about this? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9673. 9-2. We know what the de Blasio administration thinks about this. They're approving this development rather than continue to fight it in court because it's been built up already before they came in to such a degree it would be so retroactive. But they're going to try to apparently not do this kind of thing in the future. Here's Deputy Mayor Alicia Glenn from your interview with her.
Construction commenced on the project in 2013 prior to the new mayor being elected. The facts of this case are very specific, that those plans, that building permit and construction had actually already started, and I believe they were 5 or 6 stories already up by the time that the question was called, as it were. We can't, no responsible administration can require somebody retroactively to redesign their entire building.
So that's why they didn't continue to fight this in court, where it wound up and a court ruling came down just this week, kind of approving the building. Like they reversed the Blasio administration on policies that they don't like from Bloomberg, sometimes have abandoned the old Bloomberg positions, like on the stop and frisk court case,
yes,
but not in this one.
Yes, and if you look to Domino Sugar, the mayor's office, the de Blasio administration, had to finalize plans with Domino Sugar.
That affordable and market rate housing units.
In Queens.
Development.
Right, and they stopped plans on that and demanded more affordable housing from the developer, the Willentises, on that project, the Two Trees project, the Domino Sugar factory. So some are questioning why the de Blasio administration allowed this to move forward. When they have questioned, as you said, some other Bloomberg administration policies they have called a halt to.
And there was the explanation from Deputy Mayor Glenn as to why they thought this would be a step too far in terms of being retroactive on something that's already so far built. But we also got a statement from I thought I had that in front of me, and I don't. I'll get it in a minute. A statement from City Hall, which says they will oppose this in the future. Now, that will require changing the zoning regulations that you were quoting before, and that's not that simple a process.
No,
right?
And when I spoke to Deputy Mayor Alicia Glenn about this, she said that despite the administration's legitimate concerns with the corridor as a construct, it's not something that Mayor de Blasio can just change by fiat. You know, this is embedded in those zoning regulations that you can see online. So it's something they're looking into as part of their comprehensive review of the program. So this will require, zoning changes require a EULR process, which is the land use process, to kick in. So, Brian, any change to this zoning code could take at least a year.
And again, Deputy Mayor Glenn, looking forward instead of back.
Despite, obviously, our legitimate concerns with the corridor as a construct, it is not something that this mayor could just change by fiat, that this is embedded in current regulation and that it is something that we are looking at as part of our comprehensive review of the programs.
Well, you know, and going back to whether they could have stopped it, Brian, I did speak with civil rights attorney Randolph McLaughlin, and he pointed to a case. I'm still doing research on this, but apparently there was a developer in a prior administration who had gone a floor above what he was allowed to, according to the zoning regulations. And do you know that the administration, according to Randolph McLaughlin, made this developer tear down that floor to comply with zoning? So
one floor.
Yes. So there are those who say, you know, that the de Blasio administration very well could have changed the rules, even though this building was built.
Barbara in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hello, Barbara.
Yes, I can't believe I'm calling to defend a developer, but I would like to know who made the rule that the income levels have to be mixed on each floor. I don't see why, if you're getting a bargain unit and you're a moderate income person, why is it that you have to be on the penthouse floor? Why can't you be, you know, the cheaper apartments are the lower floors. So I don't see what's wrong with that.
Well, Brian, it's
and who made that stupid rule?
It's my understanding that the administration at the time was trying to prevent segregating of affordable units to the basement or the first floor. And so this zoning code apparently was put in to address that problem.
So why would they need to address, why was that a problem? Why would they need to address that problem?
I think there was a distaste for having affordable units being segregated to crappier floors. I think that was it. And I think that that perhaps developers took advantage of the law, had their attorneys look at it and said, hey, instead you can build a separate building, which might actually be better.
So, Barbara, which is more offensive to you?
To me, it's not offensive. To me, if I'm a medium income person and I'm getting an apartment in 157, supposedly, I wouldn't mind any floor, basically. So that's my attitude.
Right.
They make so many stupid laws. That's a part of the problem. Too many stupid laws abound.
And Brian, we should point out that
Thank you, Barbara. Call us again.
Sorry. The developer, Gary Barnett, agrees with the caller and says, you know, you're getting a great deal. He said, ask any one of the thousands of people who he has lined up for apartments at 40 Riverside Boulevard. Would they rather not be in the separate unit? Would they rather not have the affordable housing at all? You know, the developers say, listen, the goal is more affordable housing. It's something they say they want to provide. And they feel that this separate entrance issue has been blown up.
Robert in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hi, Robert.
Hi. Listen, you know, this whole subject reminds me of looking at the back in the segregation days of the water fountain. Here's a black water fountain, a colored water fountain, and here's a white water fountain. Well, if you want to, if you're thirsty, you'll drink from that. That's not the point. The point is that once again, we're putting segregation right up front, and we're making it legal to segregate people to a back entrance, to a section of a table, or wherever you go. And once you start this, it grows. Trust me. You can find all kinds of ways of making it sound right. But it boils down to segregation. It boils down to just that. And in terms of, like, I think at Schaefer Landing over there where Dumbo, up the street from Dumbo, they had a similar situation where they were allowing tenants. They sold it to the community that people were going to be able, through a lottery system or something, to take advantage of those great views that they have on the East River. And then you come to find out that they were on the street floor around the corner in the dark. So what's fair? Fair is fair. No matter what, these people are going to make their money anyway. And to coin it as well, you know, one way or another, they're going to feel okay with where they're at. That's like stupid to me.
What about the previous caller who said, you know, in effect, she said, it would have been a better solution to let the developers do what they were going to do in the first place, which is keep everybody in the same building, but have the subsidized affordable rate apartments on the lower floors, which would have lower property values. Would that be less segregation and less objectionable to you?
It's still segregation. And the only reason why I say that, and there's a place in Boston called Langham Court, which did a 30-30-30, which is 30% low, 30% moderate, and 30% high. And they mixed it in with the development. And people that were low were on the top floor. Some people that were middle were on and people that were high income were on the first floor. So you can do that because it's all the way that perception is everything. It's all how you put it forth to people. And if you make it a situation where I'm going to build a gorgeous building at 157, and then around the corner I'm going to build these little shacks, and those are for you people. Come on. Come on now. That's not progress.
Right.
We're stepping backwards, and we're going right into a society that says it's okay for me to be here and you not to be here because you don't make enough money.
Thanks, Robert, and you call us again. So is there a solution that the de Blasio administration hopes to propose and get passed that would prohibit both things, that is segregating the affordable housing tenants on the lower floors of the same building where they all use the same entrance, or putting them in a separate building, in effect, that's attached to the main building, and it's the sort of the adjunct building for the affordable housing tenants, and actually accomplish that within each floor, economic diversity? Is that the goal of the de Blasio administration? And is there a way that they're saying already that they're going to try to go all the way there?
Brian, if they are saying that, I have not yet heard that. I think they're overwhelmed. They're trying to create 200,000, create or preserve 200,000 new units of affordable housing. That is their primary goal. They also want to be seen as ending inequality, I believe, in New York City. How they get around this or how they deal with this is going to be tough. However, they do have some clout here because, don't forget, these developers, in exchange for creating the affordable housing on these projects, are getting very valuable goodies like tax abatements, in some cases up to 20 years of tax-free on these units. And I think that that's what makes it an especially egregious civil rights concern because they are receiving taxpayer dollars, in essence, tax breaks for these projects.
So they may not be scared away from developing at all if they've got these desegregation orders if de Blasio gets a new set of rules passed.
Yes. However, every developer I speak to, and the list is growing, tells me that, you know, if the numbers don't work on a deal, it's not going to get done. But we've heard this, and it's just hard to imagine for us right now to imagine deals not getting done when the real estate market is so lucrative here in New York.
Then there's the free market case. Scott in Soho has that, I think. Hi, Scott.
Yeah, hi. How are you?
Okay, thanks.
I think the question is, I mean, I understand if you give a subsidy and you give a big tax break to a developer, then you can demand, you know, hey, make some other apartments. But if it's somebody's property, they should be able to do whatever they want. I mean, you wouldn't want to have your apartment forced, take one of your bedrooms in your apartment and give it to somebody and then be forced to charge a certain amount. I mean, if you own the property, it should be
right.
Up to you.
Right.
You know, but it seems like this show is basically just saying, no, we're going to force these people to do this. You know, somebody took the chance and bought the land and went through and did all the project things. But, you know, now we force them to do other things. And I'm sure the council says, oh, we need affordable housing. They make them do that to jump through hoops so they can get all the permits, which is kind of extortion if you look at it that way. But you seem to think it's okay, which is kind of shocking. But.
I just want to point out again that the developers in this case are taking advantage of the inclusionary housing program, which is a program where if a developer provides a certain percentage of affordable units, typically in the past it's been 20% affordable to 80% market rate, they're allowed to get an increased floor area ratio, which means they can build higher, more density, so they can make more money because they can build higher than the zoning code permits. And in addition, they also get tax breaks, tax abatements, and other low-income housing tax credits in many cases for this exchange. They're part of an inclusionary housing program. So it's not like the city is just saying, yeah, you want to build in New York? Well, you have to do affordable housing. This is part of a program that developers actually choose to be a part of because it's profitable for them to take advantage of these tax incentives and the increased floor area ratio they get.
And Scott, keep calling us. And thank you all who weighed in on this. And I guess we will see now what new rules the de Blasio administration tries to put in motion, even as they try to put hundreds of thousands of new affordable units onto the market in New York in the coming years. We'll see what standards, as they see it, they can impose at the same time without discouraging development. WNYC's development reporter, Janet Babin, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Brian.